न तीरा न चारे। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस। शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन सौंदर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथरात्म भागवतं की निताय गौर प्रेमानंदी। ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू शिशि गुरु वंशि गौरंग। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 21. Gopya Santrishta Salila Angeshu Karajo Pritak Nyashyatma Niyatabalasya Vijanyashan Akurvata Gopya Samsprita Salila Angeshu Karajo Pritak Nyashyatma Niyatabalasya Bijanyasha akurvata Gopya Sanspreta Shalila Angeshu Karajo Prithak Nyashyatma Nyatavalasya Bijanyashan akurvata. Gopyaha, the gopis, Sanspritashalila, touching a cup of water and drinking. Angeshu on their bodies. Karayoho on their two hands. Pritak separately. Niyasha after placing the letters of the mantra. Atmani on their own. Atha then. Balasya of the child. Bijanyasham the process of mantra niyasha. Akurvata executed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. The gopis first executed the process of achman, drinking a sip of water from the right hand. They purified their bodies and hands with the Nyasha mantra and then applied the same mantra upon the body of the child. Purport. Nyasha mantra includes achman, or first drinking a sip of water kept in the right hand. There are different Vishnu mantras to purify the body. The gopis, and in fact any householders, knew the process for being purified by chanting Vedic hymns. The gopis executed this process first to purify themselves and then to purify the child Krishna. One executes the process of Anga Nyasha and Kara Nyasha simply by drinking a little sip of water and chanting the mantra. The mantra is preceded with the first letter of the name, followed by Anushvara and the word Namaha. Om Namo Jas Tavangri Avyat Manmano Mani Mans Tava Januni Avyat on and so on. By losing Indian culture, Indian householders have forgotten how to execute the Anga Nyasha and are simply busy in sense gratification without any advanced knowledge of human civilization. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishvadaya Krishna. Namo Om Vishvapadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Sacharine Nirvesesha Sunyavadi Sakshityade Sukharine Vancha Kalpa Taruvyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So one striking thing on this verse is how this Brahminical culture is basically permeated the whole social body. This Nyasha mantra is something that is followed in very strict Brahminical culture, especially for Brahmanas when they have to do worship. So even in some of our standards, we've been trained as Brahmanas to worship the deities, some of these very intricate procedures were not necessarily, you know, asked to follow in detail. Some of the devotees know, so I'm sure, I was hoping that Mukunda Raghunath will be here to ask him, because, you know, he was trained very meticulously. But there's a mudra. I think you know some of the mudras that you do. This Nyasha mantra. Nyasha means is to invoke and to touch, or to the word means to place or to touch. So with the touch of the hand, and there's a particular Nyasha mudras that you do, you know, they go into this thing, and you know, it's very particular, and there is a particular mudra to invoke a particular deity, and the idea is to place in different parts of your body and to invoke the presence of a deity for protection of the body and for purification of the body. So the idea is that you see the body as a purified place of worship, with the understanding that also the personality of God is within your heart. So, there is Mukunda Raghunath. So there is all this. So there's all these mantras. There's all these things that you do. I mean, I know there's this particular mudra. It's a Nyasha mudra, and then you start by touching the head, and then touching the top lip, and then things like that, and then you invoke a mantra. It's something similar that we do when we put tilak. You know, you're touching the body, and there's a particular way, and then there's a mantra that you do. So these are Brahminical procedures for worshipping the deities. That even, you know, in our society, we've been trained as Brahmanas, but in reality, you know, we still have to embrace Brahminical culture. It's almost like we haven't fully getting there. Because the fact is that in these Vedic societies, the Brahminical culture permeated so much everything that all the different classes, Prabhupada says here, not just the gopis who were, you know, Vaishya ladies, cow, you know, farmers, they knew these procedures and these mantras. But any householder. So it was common thing. It was a common thing to understand the process of purifying oneself by mantras and by, you know, all these Brahminical procedures. So this is something very important, that in the process of creating or again re-establishing this Brahminical culture, that is not necessarily that we cannot have Brahminical training even if we have a particular a nature that is not the nature of a Brahmana. We may not be inclined to be teachers or to be priests like that. We may be inclined to be a business person, or we may be inclined to be a Sudra or a Kshatriya, but still we can be trained, or we, it's necessary, it's compulsory that we've been trained in Brahminical culture, that we know the Brahminical procedures, regardless of whatever nature or occupation we have. And we see that's how the training that Prabhupada established is. It's a Brahminical training. Sometimes we question, you know, especially in the process of, you know, is it appropriate to train anyone in all these things? I mean, people are not necessarily very inclined by nature, you know. I mean, you have to sort of, do we have to recognize those who are inclined to be Brahmanas to training as a Brahmana? Sometimes, you know, we have these questions like that. But the fact is that it is important, it is necessary. Because regardless, we have this Vanashram Dharma, that we have these four divisions of Varnas. But all the divisions of Varnas, I think the only ones that are excluded for being fully trained in, at least in the Vedic culture, fully trained in these mantras and initiation, all the things, to actually be dvijas or to get this Brahmin is a sutras, I think, actually, now that I remember. But even then, they are still sort of very acquainted and guided by, you know, these principles. So it is important to receive this training, especially now with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya opens or allows this learning of this. The mantras are available for us by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Especially we have the supreme mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is available to all of us. And with that, the purification and the elevation, regardless of, you know, it could be the position that you have, even beyond sutras, you know, even if you're that Pulinda, Hiras, and all the things, all these different Melechas and Hunas, you know, remember that verse? I can't remember. You remember that verse? Pulinda, Puka. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, they give you the list. Kirata. Yes, so regardless, even if you are uncivilized, of the uncivilized culture, you still can be fully purified by the association with the devotees. You can be elevated to the highest position. So so for householders to be able to also follow the ashram, the four ashrams, what is the training that we receive in ashram? What do we learn in ashram? In the process of the varnas, you learn to work according to your nature. So is material knowledge that is necessary. In ashram, we learn transcendental knowledge and we learn Brahminical culture. We learn these procedures, we learn how to worship the deities, we learn the activities of that are for the purification of the self. So we learn all these things. We learn, you know, in our case, it's a much more simplified, you know, Prabhupada kindly has made it very simple, but he have provided the essence. So we've been given all the different angas that are just very necessary for the purification of the self. So we've been trained on those things. Immediately we train how to put tilak and how to chant these mantras. So then you purify the self by, you know, there's the touching and there's the invocation of deities you know, names of the Lord for the protection of the body and for to have that understanding that this body is a temple and we have to act and deal with the body as such, as a temple of the Lord. So we learn, we're immediately engaged in worshiping the deity. So we learn mantras. So this is what we learn in the ashram. So the execution of the activities of the four ashrams are basically guided and permeated by Brahminical culture. So it's compulsory. It's compulsory. That's why these two things are simultaneous, varnas and ashram. Varna and ashram. So as you go through your life, you pass through the different stages of ashram. And so people are very familiar. In the Vanashram culture, they're very familiar with Brahminical procedures. But we know that this culture has been lost. In India, Prabhupada explains here that Indian household has forgotten how to execute the Anganyasa and is simply busy in sense gratification. So right now, the knowledge is still there in India, but it becomes a ritual that at times, you know, people figure it out. Oh, it's, why are we doing all this thing? All this, because with the advancement of Kali Yuga and with the advancement of this mentality for that sense gratification rules, and with the lack of transcendental knowledge that is there in the world, then, you know, people consider these traditions as, you know, what would be the word, obsolete. You know, they have, what is the purpose? So they're just obstacles on more efficiently advancing in sense gratification, which is, in modern society, in the modern world, is the goal of life. When there is no transcendental knowledge, naturally, the default goal of life is sense gratification. So when the goal of life is sense gratification, then all these things become an obstacle. Religion is an obstacle. Morality is an obstacle. Traditions are obstacles. Culture could be an obstacle. So the culture change to feed the times, which is much more focused on immediate sense gratification. So that is the cause of the loss of these traditions. I mean, we see that even in our modern sense gratification culture. You know, say in Western culture, you know, most of us here in the temple room are from Western background. Only Karunanidhi Prabhu. And then I like to ask you, you pass the microphone, you grew up in Jagannath Puri, that is a bed of Brahminical culture, you know? But how is these traditions, like when you grew up, these traditions, you most likely, you know, your family and you know, things like that. I mean, it was part of culture. It's part of the traditions there to do all these nyasha, anga nyashas and mantras, you know, and this type of thing. I'm asking if you can share with us.
You know, actually, when we grow there in India especially, so it is by birth, by, you know, by what you can say, automatically develops because of association around with others.
So they were there by association. Oh God, you say it was lost or?
Yeah, because of bad association sometimes we lose everything, you know, we don't continue all those things, we cannot remember everything.
Yeah.
And it is because of bad association. Or else it is by birth. Everybody knows Krishna, how to chant and how to practice mantra, everything.
But by bad association, this thing is being starting to get lost.
Yeah.
So remember, remember from Srila Prabhupada's Leela, how he will find in Jagannath Puri people, in many of the Brahmanas eating fish.
Many Brahmanas what?
Brahmanas eating fish.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So these things, you know, are being lost, gradually being lost, is because of a lack of transcendental knowledge. And without vidya, then the goal of life becomes, you know, it switches. So it's basically it's two things, vidya and avidya. The Sri Upanishad tells when vidya is guiding, then the goal of life becomes self-realization. So the purpose of life is to purify oneself to realize one's constitutional position. When avidya is stronger, then the goal of life is sense gratification. And then we hear, you know, in mantra 9, how sense gratification basically takes us in a spiral down into the lowest, you know, situation, hellish situation. So it's a gradual descent into very deep materialistic life that becomes miserable, hellish. In Western culture, we also experience the same thing. You know, I remember when I grew up, you know, say my grandparents were, you know, simple Baisha people. One side was farmer, one side was, you know, they have their little business there, you know. And remember, you know, us being taught that we have to eat with this, you know, this have to be in this side, you know, we have to have this fork in this side, and then you have to eat these different things, that I could never understand why we have to do that. What is the use of this thing, all these things? You know, like supposedly that's what educated people does. And in Latin America, we have that thing that you have to sit this way. My mother, you know, if I put my elbows in the, you know, then immediately everybody will scream, take your elbows out, you know. It's like, what's the big deal about this? I remember just thinking, you know, and then rebelling about this whole thing. Because all these rules and regulations, they were a disturbance on your sense gratification. If I wanted, you know, to grab something with my hand, you know, it was easy, you know, it's an immediate gratification. But all these things is proper things, you have to be dressed, you know, like, why do we have to dress? You have to bathe, you know, and, you know, all these things, you know. Mixing the food, you know, and you have to start first with the The first was, you know, a particular thing, the supper, and then this and this and that, but you know, and then you go to the, so it was all these different divisions. So there was all these cultural things that were there, that were given to us, to that was part of, it was regulations for society, basically to be civilized, according to, you know, the culture, the tradition that we have. The tradition in Latin America was, you know, from the Spanish empire at that time. So we were following, you know, a lot of the, you know, you try to emulate the royalty. I think in South Africa, you follow, you know, they have the United Kingdom, the British sort of traditions, you know. And it also is very, you have all these things, the proper people how to speak. But as time passes, all the things are lost. Why? Because our goal is sense gratification in materialistic society, and then this all these things are obstacles. Religion is an obstacle. That's how, you know, modern sort of atheistic thinkers, they say that religion is the opioid of society, right? That you know, is simply used to distract society from being very efficient and achieving their goals. So it's obstacles. So let's get away without. So all these things is being lost. Just recently listening to Srila Prabhupada's Lila, and the struggles that Srila Prabhupada had to go in building the whole Hare Krishna movement in India, especially with building the big temples, and Mumbai, Vrindavan, and Mayapur. How much a struggle have to go, especially with Mumbai, that he have to go with people cheating, and then the government against. And right now I'm listening to Srila Prabhupada's dealing with the government, you know, some high commissioner declining or denying their permit to build the property or to build the temple, because this whole chanting is a nuisance. He used the word nuisance, and Prabhupada was furious. He just went after, you know, like this guy using the word nuisance. Nuisance, because he said he could have used any other words. He could have said, you know, this Hare Krishna chanting is good for the devotees, but some people they don't like, so, you know, so it's not good for everybody. He Prabhupada will accept that. But to say it's a nuisance? You know, he was very upset about that. And then on the top of that, next to the Hare Krishna land, there was a cinema. And in the cinema, they used to have all this, the traffic was a huge traffic, and all this nonsense going, and this Bollywood music going on. So Prabhupada pointed out, so that is, this guy is tolerating all this Bollywood stuff, but the Hare Krishna chanting is a nuisance. So he make the case, he make the devotees, you have to convince, you know, the people of Mumbai, the importance of this Hare Krishna movement. He said the approach is, this is your culture. We're from the West, and we are accepting your culture. And your culture say, Krishna says, Satatam Kirtayanto Mam, that this chanting of Hare Krishna is done by the Satatan, the devotees, the purified devotees. It's your culture, the chanting of mantras, the purificatory process of chanting mantras. So what is the problem? Why don't you join us? Krishna says that, how that purifies us. So it's your culture, so what is the harm? You join us in what we're doing here. So that was Prabhupada's approach, and he succeeded. He was able to galvanize, support, reminding people of their lost culture. So this is what Prabhupada's mission is, reviving, re-establishing the culture, the Vedic culture. So he started by establishing a Brahminical training, which is necessary to actually allow the Vedic culture to be reestablished. So it's important for us that we take and we understand the importance of understanding all these principles, because they're meant for obviously just chanting Hare Krishna can purify yourself. Chanting Hare Krishna and listening to the Bhagavatam and worshipping the deities, etc., etc. But boy, we can use a lot of help for purification, some of us. Anything that is there that helps us purify. So Brahminical culture is everything is to enhance and to help and to further, go further in purity, purifying oneself. So all these procedures are very powerful. I mean, it's nice when you see, like in the morning I do Achman when I have to worship the deities. And in general, you chant the mantra, you know, Oma Pavitra Pavitrava, like that. And then you say, and you take your 3 sips of Achman, and then you go. And then I see Mukunda Raghunath Prabhu doing the same thing. He sits down and he goes to all these, things, and, touching this and putting water in this. It takes probably 3 times, is 3 times longer. My wife also does all these different things, touching this and touching that. I'm more of a sudra nature. Musicians are sudras, so I have no patience for those things. So I try to do the shortest thing. Okay, this is at least this is what we given to us. Prabhupada says 16 rounds. That's it. So minimal. So we've been given the minimal, but those things help in one sense. Mother goodness means, that all these purifying activities we embrace. So we have to embrace Brahminical culture. We have to embrace it. We have to embrace it, and then we can teach it too. And regardless of what our nature is, we have to embrace Brahminical culture. We can still work according to our nature, but we have to know these procedures, because that will allow us to be very well situated in the path of Krishna consciousness. Any comment or questions? Yes. Keshava Kishore.
Thanks for the class, Suwal. There's a sociological explanation about losing certain traditions, and it's that dominant economy brings the dominant culture. Normally, the most powerful economy is the one that tends to swipe traditions as it is happening right now. The United States is the dominant country with a dominant economy, and they're imposing their culture, pop culture, everywhere. And there are some fortunate cases in which there's a syncretism between two cultures that get together, and there's a third one that comes with different expressions, and which is important. How can we can learn all the Brahminical nuances in the culture that should be in current in order for us to understand the straight sacredness of everything, you know, see all the sanctification, how to fight or how to counteract that wave of cultural nonsense when those are the guys that have the money, the communications, the power. They have the power. How we, as a small community that is growing, literally very slow, you know, in a dominant world by vulgarity.
And the thing that comes to mind is also, just listening to the Lila of Srila Prabhupada, in the building of the temple in Vrindavan. So in his book, some of the residents of Vrindavan, especially some of the Goswami, they were not very happy because Prabhupada has written in his books that, you know, some of the Goswamis, the so-called Goswamis of Vrindavan, and he's referring to some of the so-called Goswamis of Vrindavan are deviating and not following, are doing all kinds of nonsense activities and things like that. And some of the Goswami caste, they took offense for that. And Prabhupada was explaining that this is not his words. These are the six Goswamis of Vrindavan's words. You know, in sort of in caution about false or pretenders that were there. And so the power is a different, I mean, there's a difference in the circumstances, but the principle remains the same, and I'm just going to get there. So the influence of these Goswamis in Vrindavan was, you know, they were the influential people. They had the power. Mm-hmm. To, you know, guide things and arrange things. But so Prabhupada said, the last thing he said to Gurudas, who was the temple president of Vrindavan at that time, and then they were in the middle of trying to build the temple, and with the certain opposition, the strong opposition that were there too, Prabhupada said, that in order to counteract the influence of the false Goswamis, one have to be like a Goswami oneself. So one have to be one have to represent properly, or one have to be one have to strive for purity in order to counteract impurity. So in one sense, so the principle is that we have to actually become serious about what we represent. So the task is in our court. So we have to become a better representative of our culture, of Brahminical, Vaishnava culture, ISKCON culture, Srila Prabhupada's mission. So, and as we become more pure, then we can easily counteract that. And right now is, as we still have something to grow, one time Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Krishna can give us the whole world in 18 days, if we're ready. So we have to be like Arjuna, like, you know, fully surrender, and Krishna gave him the whole winning the battle in 18 days. So we can also conquer the world in 18 days, provided we're like that.
No, I have what you said. I have that clear. No, that we can create an impact in our relationships, but it is a small impact compared to what the dominant culture, the culture of vulgarity, is doing in terms of this kind of practices in a larger collective.
But you see the impact that Srila Prabhupada had, because Prabhupada has, you know, this great potency because of his purity. A huge impact. Prabhupada basically, he changed the world.
Yeah.
You know, in many ways, not only spiritually, but also materially. That's the impact. I mean, we can ever be, match Srila Prabhupada, but Prabhupada is the Shakti Avesh avatar, but we can, you know, in one sense. Sorry. And then
I just also had a thought that in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, generally spiritual societies are the minority because of the influx of the higher, lower modes of nature. But it's not required that culture is given from the top down, generally, because they're more powerful. The ignorant masses accept and follow in the footsteps of their leaders. But the Hare Krishna movement is really a revolution, which starts from the bottom and goes up. So if the masses accept the philosophy and they start living in that way, then we see revolutions take place and the people overthrow outdated or unfavorable governments. So if the people, through their purity, sufficiently take and we can sufficiently spread it, then there's no limit to the spread of positive culture. But you know, that is like a grassroots revolution. It goes from the bottom up.
Thank you. Oh, this
Thank you for your class, first of all. You made a lot of nice points, and it reminds me of many points. I'll do my best. I'm not an eloquent speaker, obviously, so sometimes it takes me longer than I want to, so forgive me for that. You were mentioning over this verse, in these series of verses mentions that we, in your class, we do these rituals to purify ourselves. Now, one thing that comes to mind is that there's kind of spiritual rituals and materialistic rituals. Materialistic rituals means to clean your body with soap and water, you know, that's a ritual we perform every day, or clean your clothes with bleach. And then we do our mantras and deity worship to purify, at least ideally purify our consciousness. But we see that there's so many paths on that, even though we may use bleach to purify our bodies, it's not that you could go to the store and purchase bleach and purify your envy. It's not that easy. Just like Durvasa Muni, he was pure on the outside, but he wasn't pure on the inside. He was envious of Ambarish Maharaj. The ideal is that purity means you're happy. So why wasn't he happy? Because he was envious. He was like, I know all these rituals. I know all these mantras. I know the whole Vedas. But why is Ambarish Maharaj getting more attention than me? So that indicates simply by knowing rituals, that doesn't guarantee that people consider you the greatest authority. That's what Lord Chaitanya told the illiterate Brahmana. Gita dita chaye napi bhati bhavena cheta sabeda sastra puran nani tena ditani sarvashaha. The most important things is not the rituals, but the character, the consciousness behind the rituals. My question essentially is that I would refer to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I can't remember the verse, but this is in his book, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm a writer, I'm not a memorizer, so I could reference the point if I could reference it later. I wrote my notes down. But basically, in this past, in one particular part of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, he was mentioning the difference between basically ritualistic devotees and spiritualistic. And Bhaktisiddhanta also wrote a book called Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. So in this section, Bhaktisiddhanta says that even Bhava Bhaktas, unorthodox devotees, may perform things that seems to go contrary against the rules and regulations, like Vaida Bhaktas. So one analogy that came to mind is that there's rules and regulations in the government. It says you can't run a red light. If anyone runs a red light, you'll get a ticket, or etc. But if a child sees the ambulance or the cops run a red light, they may say they're breaking the law. But actually, they're not breaking the law. Why? Because they care more about humanity than others. So they may do things that's contrary to the ritualistic standards. So in this verse, this part of that Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions is that Bhava Bhaktas, unritualistic devotees, may perform activity that's contrary to the ritualistic rules and regulations. But if one criticizes, if a Vaida Bhakta criticizes Bhava Bhaktas, thinking that they're not following the rules and regulations, then they'll lose their bhakti because this offensive mentality. Just like nobody will criticize the ambulance, nobody will criticize the police officer. And Prabhupada also mentioned this point in the seventh canto, chapter 14, verse 39. That's a very important point. He quotes one verse in that purport from the 11th canto. It's an important verse. It says that even if one performs deity worship, if he does not treat others properly or devotees properly, then he's considered a prakriti bhakta, a materialistic devotee. Why? Because he may have the purity on the outside, but he doesn't have the purity on the inside. He's not considering that the common sense that even, like, we consider Govardhan Shila sacred because it's connected to the Lord, but they don't have the common sense that's to see that Krishna says in the Gita, what's that verse? Vidyavinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavi Hasini Shuni Chaiva Swapaki Cha Pandita Samardarshana. Everyone is actually sacred because they're connected to the Lord, and one who worships the deity but doesn't treat others properly or devotees properly, he's considered the lowest kind of devotee. And so that's one of the most important things. We may not be able to do these rituals, but as long as we have the character and love and respect and always wishing people as well, regardless of whether we disagree with them, then we're good to go. We don't have to know all these mantras and rituals. There's so many paths on the illiterate Brahmana. The wives of the Brahmanas, in the Christian book, the wives of the Brahmanas, I forgot what the chapter is called. It basically says the wives of the Brahmanas is blessed by Krishna. The wives of the Brahmanas didn't know any rituals. The Brahmanas knew the rituals. But Krishna considered the wise more authoritative than the brahmanas because they had the love in their heart. The brahmanas only cared about the rituals. They didn't care about anybody but themselves or the rituals. So that's one of the most important things. Anyway, there's some points to keep in mind, but I mean, you could share what you like on it. I kind of made my point, but like I said, you know, these are some points to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's a very essential things for all of us as aspiring devotees and, you know, trainees or in the path of elevation of, you know, that we have to move from Kanishta to Madhyama. At least Prabhupada makes that, you know, sort of compulsory. You have to move from Kanishta to Madhyama. Kanishta means, that's one of the symptoms, you know, it is explained, it's one of the descriptions of a Kanishta Adhikari, that you see the deity, but you don't, you know, you don't see the same thing with the devotees. So you disregard the devotees at time. So you don't have the full understanding. So where the problem with Kanishta Adhikari is that you're in this toggle war. The Kanishta Adhikari is described as Prakrita Bhakta, materialistic devotee. So you have these two things happening there. You have the materialistic person and the devotee. And you're in this very awkward situation. It's not wholesome, it's divided. You're like a bipolar, you know? You have the materialistic part and the devotee part. Sometimes you're this beautiful devotee, sometimes you're this obnoxious materialistic person, you know? So we have to move from that. We have to become wholesome. And it's natural. I mean, as we mature, we can sort of understand that we all more or less in the same boat, and we all have to go through those growing pains, you know. It's like we don't judge teenagers by being immature, you know. They're learning, like that. So yes, we have to come to that position. We have to come to the position that our achar matches our prachar. So, and it's on us, it's on each of us individually, that we have to take up seriously the process of overcoming our materialistic or our material egos, you know, like that. And we have to understand it's gradual. And we have to understand that it takes determination, it takes sacrifice, it takes, you know, and it have to be guided. It's part of the process. It have to be guided. You have to be guided by our spiritual authorities. We have to be able to embrace that system, the pariprasnena sevaya. You're serving, you're inquiring, and you're submissive to your spiritual, you know, authorities, to your spiritual master. And, you know, we move through that. So, when for some of us it takes more longer to, you know, to come to be, to embrace that whole thing. But we have to get to that point. And then, yes, then everything, then when we're situated comfortably, we embrace the system, then yes, we can have, according to how we're advancing, then we can have further and further influence in others, the capacity to actually, the empowerment to be able to help others. So it's all on us individually. We have to we have to go further and further in the process of purification. And the process of in the process of purification, it is important that we are examples of what we preach. So therefore, for Vaishnavas, achar is so important, Vaishnava etiquette. We don't take it, you know, we because we come so, from some, such a uncultured background that for us it's like, well, you know, you really have to, you know, bow down every time you see something, you know, type of thing, you know, I mean, it's a leader, you know. But the more we embrace this culture, the more we absorb it, the etiquette of being a devotee, you know, the more we represent and we're able to teach and we're able to influence others, change the world. I don't think we can change the world just by rationalizing the status quo, you know, like that. We really have to embrace our Vaishnava culture. My, you know, limited realization. Anything else? All right. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
You gonna love me?
No, sorry.